This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Maddie Correo, the Government Affairs Manager at Americans for Tax Reform. We want to get her thoughts as the members of the Democratic Party in both the House and Senate come to what they think is a final agreement on what's known as the Disclose Act, their response to the Supreme Court decision in the Citizens United case that broadly expanded the amount of political speech and campaigns. This would severely limit that. And Maddie, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So the way this kind of unfolded over the past several days is that most organizations that plan to do any sort of political advertising down the stretch in the campaign had to disclose, and that's the meaning behind the act here, who their donors were and so forth. Then the NRA got an exemption. Now it seems as though big labor's getting an exemption. What's going on here?
Well, this bill was never written as a bill that included labor in a lot of the provisions, which is a huge departure from what campaign finance law normally regulates. Traditionally, unions, corporations, trade associations have all been covered under somewhat similar types of regulatory regimes. So this resulted in a huge departure from that precedent. Beyond that, though, this bill targets a lot of different types of speech by specifically a couple different groups of people. Advocacy groups are going to have a really hard time speaking under this bill because of the onerous disclosure requirements labeled therein. So it's making it really, really difficult for grassroots organizations, people who want to have a voice in the process, to be able to do that, because it just requires all these different hoops for you to jump through in order to get to the point where you're talking about a candidate or an issue in a timely manner. Which, again, you talked about Citizens United, and this bill is supposed to be something that addresses the Citizens United decision, when really it's just being used as an excuse to overreach beyond anything that was even addressed in the Supreme Court ruling, and insert more regulation and more burdens on the free speech of Americans. So it's problematic in a couple different ways. But beyond that, what the bill does is it really targets a lot of different corporate speech, because, again, this is the populist momentum behind the Citizens United decision that's, you know, going to allow corporations to buy our elections and that sort of thing, which of course is unfounded for several different reasons. But the bill, as it is written, targets the speech by corporations in a couple different ways. For one, it doesn't let government contractors speak at all, as well as TARP recipients, but doesn't have any of the same requirements on unions that represent public sector employees. So, you know, General Motors isn't allowed to speak, but the UAW is. UAW is. So, you know, these are things that are problematic on their face because of the equal protection issues. And another restriction in the bill is that you can't have, if you have, you know, over 20% foreign ownership in terms of shareholders for a corporation, they can't speak, but any labor union that, of course, has international members is, again, free to speak in any way, shape, or form. You know, the SEIU, the I in SEIU stands for international. You know, these huge labor organizations have had international members for, you know, 50-plus years. And then beyond that, the bill, right before it came to the floor, there was a 45-page manager's amendment that was dropped into it that made a couple technical changes that now allow unions to transfer money between groups, which before they were going to be beholden to some of the limits that would have triggered disclosure. Now with this manager's amendment, they can transfer money because their money comes from dues of a certain nature rather than, you know, contributions or something that you would be seeing in the corporate world. So a lot of different things that are going on that specifically target the speech of certain individuals against others, specifically labor unions.
Maddie, let's follow up on a couple of the points you made there. First of all, TARP recipients can't engage in political speech. Does that include those who have already paid the money back? And is there any sunset to this, or are these companies just out in the cold in perpetuity?
As far as I know, that if you have gotten money under the TARP program, you're done. Like, you can't speak any longer.
Fascinating. And
and as we know, you know, a lot of these banks and other institutions didn't take the money willingly. They were somewhat forced to by the Treasury Department. So, you know, it's a whole other host of issues.
Is there any chance this succeeds in standing up to constitutional muster?
Oh, it's unconstitutional in several different ways. But again, it is written and being adjudicated as such that it doesn't really matter, because it's going to go into effect. As soon as the president signs the bill, it goes into effect 30 days after. Whereas other, and again, this is another departure from how campaign finance law bills are normally written, is that after it goes into effect, or it goes into effect immediately, instead of allowing time for the FEC to make some regulatory rulemaking to clarify a lot of the ambiguities in this bill. So in McCain-Feingold, you had a period period of time where the FEC could come in and say, listen, this is how you speak with these new regulations, and this is how you need to go about it. We don't have that here. So not only is this bill intentionally trying to make speech difficult, it makes speech difficult by being just particularly ambiguous in a lot of different things. So people will be intimidated from speaking because they're just confused, just because they don't have any guidance as to how they're supposed to be operating in this post-Disclose Act world.
Maddie, in terms of the way things were before the Citizens United decision, advocacy groups still had to jump through quite a few hoops and react and obey different government regulations. Just how much different is it if you're an advocacy group, you want to have an impact in this year's presidential or congressional campaigns to get your message on the air? Is it the main thing that you have to release to the government who your donors are and who's involved in your effort, or does it go a whole lot deeper than that?
Well, it's deeper in the sense that it makes it it shifts the paradigm for campaign finance disclosure. So how campaign finance disclosure laws have been approached in the past is that we are looking to see who is spending money to say what. So if you have an ad on a TV where you're opposing a candidate, disclosure laws were aimed at showing people who was paying for that ad. What the Disclose Act does is it says, we don't care who's paying for the ad. We don't care who's making this speech possible. We care about the people who belong to this group. So all of a sudden, you're no longer concerned with people who are actually doing the speaking. You're concerned with people who are associated with people who are doing speaking or people who could potentially speak at some point. So this is a big difference between saying, we care who's saying this. You know, this is why we need disclosure because this person is funding it and they have, you know, X and Y and Z tie to something else that is significant, versus all of these members in this group are somehow implicated for the speech that someone else is doing. So this is a huge problem. It's unconstitutional because of a Supreme Court ruling where the Supreme Court ruled that you can't force groups to just give up their names of lists of people just because you want to know who belongs to a group. Like, disclosure only goes so far until it becomes intimidation. This case was NAACP versus Alabama, and it's pretty clear as to why Alabama might want the list of members in the NAACP in the 50s and 60s. You know, that wasn't disguised to anyone. The same thing is going on here now, where you have the Democrat majority wanting to know exactly who it is, who is speaking, and who is associated with people who are speaking, so they can target those individuals. So that's a huge jump that makes it very difficult for groups to speak because they have a lot of donors who don't want necessarily to be disclosed, but they have people who are, you know, making general activities of a group possible, and you need that money for, you know, the daily occurrences of a group. You're not necessarily spending their money on political ads, but all of a sudden the government is saying, we don't care if you're speaking or not, we care if you might potentially speak.
Very quickly, any doubt as to whether this passes Congress?
The House was a pretty close vote. It passed with 219 votes, which isn't a heck of a lot for a bill that's supposedly only about disclosure. The Senate looks a little bit tenuous at this point. Feinstein came out after some of the exemptions were made in the bill saying she would no longer support it. You know, this was before the exemption went from when it was first written to specifically target the NRA. It was written for a million. You had to have a million members. Then it was brought down to 500,000 members to bring in a couple more groups that would get that exemption. So she said that before it was brought down to 500,000. So perhaps it doesn't still stand. But there's still a lot of people who are opposed to it. No Republican in the Senate has come out in favor of it. So we're hoping that Republicans hold steady and this thing doesn't get out of Congress.
Maddie, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Maddie Correo is the Government Affairs Manager at Americans for Tax Reform. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily.